On April 9th, one of the most important fights in the welterweight division that you could make with or without a title, it will take place. UFC 273, Jacksonville, Florida, and it will involve Khamzat Chimaev versus our next guest, Gilbert Durinho Burns. Luke Thomas, Brian Campbell, Morning Combat here to talk to none other than you, good sir. How are you doing?
Doing great, thank you.
We are here in Sanford MMA in sunny South Florida. Let's talk about this fight, Khamzat Chimaev. We'll start there. A lot of people wondering why you took it, because you seem to be much further along in your career, much higher up in the division. Granted, he's got a ton of hype from what's going on, but he's never really even faced anyone like you, much less beat you. Why'd you take it?
That wasn't the first option. We want to fight Kobe. That was the fight that I was looking for. But then they make the rematch. After the rematch, the fight with Jorge, and I knew it would be hard to get an opponent. And then when he beat Li Jiliang, I knew the hype was going to get crazy and no one was to fight him. And then no one was giving me a fight. I wasn't getting a fight. I was just like, I text Ali and say, I want to fight this guy. I think they're going to offer it to me, so I'm already letting you know I want to fight this guy.
And we've seen the DM. Yes. We can confirm this.
We want to point this out. We saw Gilbert with the timestamp from the day and everything else right after the last fight with Khamzat and Li Jiliang. He literally hits up his manager and goes, I want it. His manager goes, why? But you did it. Here we
well,
are.
Well, I'll answer it for you. You wanted it because you're a savage. And I say that as a compliment to where you are in your career at this point. Why do you think, though, the rest of the world doesn't want to face Khamzat Chimaev at this point, at this moment?
A lot of guys want it. I think it's a little controversial because you see the Neil Magny say he wanted. I know they asked the fight for Vicente Luque, and he said he wanted. Luke Rockhold said he wanted. For sure, a lot of guys don't want it, but it just, the way I see it, we both want to fight. For sure, he's a little bit behind, but we kind of asking to get an opponent. No one shows up. It was just like, I'm putting my hands up. The guy's putting his hands up over there. Just like, I fight you. Let's do it.
What is he? Give me the scouting report. Imagine I hadn't seen him fight, and you could tell me all about him. How do you evaluate him as a fighter and as an opponent?
I think he's a very good fighter. I think he's wrestling. I think he's best strength. For sure, he got power in his hands. When the guy has one knockout, yeah, but when he has more than one with one punch, for sure the guy has power on his hands, and he can grapple. I don't think he's the high level he's grappling, but good control, good ground and pound. He has that thing that I had before. Whenever you never lost and you feel a little bit untouchable, you
feel invincible,
you feel like, I like that. I like that confidence that he has. And I've been there. I was like that, and I lost to a guy that was very experienced, very calm, Rashid Magomedov in Brazil. He just put me on a place that I never felt, you know, like things wasn't working. And I think he can brought the same to this guy.
When you say his grappling, he's overall very, very good, but his grappling isn't necessarily there. But what we've seen, granted you're the expert, but what we've seen is he's been running over dudes. So what would you say is, give me a sense of his ground game. What's good about it? What maybe do you think is some other areas?
I think he's very long, and he used that very, very good. He combined that the wrestling, the takedowns with the advancing position. He does a good job. His arms are very long. He does a good job with Dars and Anaconda. He get those chokes very good. A good control on the top. He gets the back very good. He has a good, very easy, takes the back, you know, controlling with the long legs. We're going to test him on bottom. We're going to test a little bit more defense. We're going to test getting up a couple of times. A lot of things that I want to see if he does have the answer, you know, like on the grappling aspect, getting up, getting out of balance, getting, you know, attacks from different angles, from neck, arm bars, triangle, leg locks, sweeps, get ups. Especially when you face a guy that's able to mix all of that. It's not just a sweep. It's a sweep. If not working, he's getting underneath. If it's not working, then we're going to a leg. If it's not working, we push it. We get up. Like, I want to see when the guy combines all that, how he can answer.
We've seen in the news cycle, you say, okay, you respect what Chimaev brings to the here, but you think you can take advantage of it. But true or false, you're bringing in some super top secret Russian grapplers, and you're not disclosing the names. They might be here. They might be hiding behind the pads.
That was
there.
At their request, correct? They requested to remain anonymous.
So what is not in your game completely that you're hoping this ad to this training camp does to prepare you to defeat Chimaev?
A couple things that they put on my game, especially the cage control and a lot of things too. The way I see is I need to get a long guy wrestler, like not a wrestler, not American wrestler, but a Russian wrestler with a Russian system, like trying to take me down, hold on to my legs, control long. So the way I see, I need to be in that position a couple of times to get comfortable, even if it's a bad position, but I need to feel that many times in my training camp and then start getting the answers. And sometimes, first time I didn't get the answer, like, man, I feel very uncomfortable. And then I was kind of getting better into that, seeing, visualizing, seeing the position, studying. And that's what I need for these guys. Like, especially nowadays, you know, I spar many times. I grapple many times. So now what I want to see when I do have a fight coming up, I want to get as close as I can to what I'm facing. If I'm facing freaking Neil Magny, I'm going to bring a tall. If we don't have here Sample, I'm going to bring a tall guy, lanky, moving good, good boxing, good takedowns. If I'm fighting Sean Brady, I want to bring a small guy, very strong. Like
lots of tattoos.
Me, a lot of, yeah, like that way. I think nowadays that I have a lot of experience to go through a camp, get very confident going through, I need to bring a guy to do very similar the things that I'm facing.
Russian mystery men. I wonder if it's Khabib and Fedor.
It's definitely not Khabib and Fedor. But the question I want to have is this. I know you can't tell us everything, but try to give us just a sense of things. What do the Russians do in terms of how they wrestle that is so different from the Americans?
Okay. I think they mastering the cage control more than Americans, you know. And when I see a Russian, sometimes I think, man, those guys are very strong. They do a lot of energy. They're not.
They're not physically super strong?
No, they're very technical in the cage. They don't waste a lot of energy. They're very smart, and they have a little sequence. You go to a single's not working, go back to the body, go back to single. Like, it just makes you gas a lot more, and then they get good hips, good grips, good head position. I like to say they have a system that they've been doing for a long time, and it's not a secret, but they're doing that very good. And whenever they go to the floor, they positioning very good to get a ground and pound. And one of the things that we have when you take the guy down as a grappler, as a wrestler, sometimes you just want to hold control first, but then apply damage. But they do a very good thing, controlling the hips, controlling the legs. Then you don't have legs, you don't have your hips. Those are your big muscles right here. Whenever they control, then it's easy to do a ground and pound. I think they developed that system so good, and we didn't pay attention too much. I mean, we did, but some couple Russians are not that good, but we got a couple Russians like Khabib, a couple Dagestan, like Islam Makhachev, and a couple other guys, they do very good, but it's very simple they do, you know? And then, for me, the difference was the amount of energy. They don't spend a lot of energy. They're very smart.
Well, he's 35, but he's a young 35. I'm going to be 36 in July. I'm an old 43.
And he's got two kids.
I can't even eat out of a gas station anymore. What are the stakes, though? Because of the buzz, okay, it's a gamble to fight this version of Chimaev. No one really knows how good, but it's clear you're being opportunistic. You want to take advantage of that buzz. Do you think a win over Chimaev gets you directly back in the title picture?
Maybe. I don't think. It all depends on the performance, to be very honest with you. I would like to say yes, but maybe.
Has the UFC said anything to you about it?
I heard Dana saying if it makes sense the winner going to, but that opinion can change it every time.
I wonder if he defeats you, he may be on the way to a title shot.
Maybe, but I think everything depends on the performance. If any one of us go there and do a spectacular performance, for sure title shot. But if it goes different than everyone expecting, me going hard, he's going crazy, and then one guy getting a finish. But it might not go that way, you know, it might get a little, and split decision win, I don't think either one going to.
This is a very level-headed fighter.
Yeah.
Most of the time we talk to fighters, and you understand, like they're it's only positive, it's only yes, it's only affirmative thinking.
Wish.
You're kind of. It's interesting. At 35, you seem to understand how to balance all of these competing difficulties and interests, right?
He knows the business now.
Do you feel that way? Like you're a senior in this sort of game, so to speak.
Senior,
no. I don't mean it that way. I don't mean old. What I mean to say is you have graduated past other newer folks.
Yeah, I've been there a couple of times, and I see things. A title shot can never be promised. Like, you got to earn. So me going there against these guys, like you said, is a little gamble. But I like the risk, and I like the rewards. Beating these guys, a lot of eyes on me, a lot of people seeing. Beat these guys and get a finish. Title shot. If you're not, maybe Colby on the way. That's the way you see it.
Do you see Colby and Jorge fighting in a steak restaurant?
Right down the road. What's your take on that? Because you know where Jorge's from. You know when he says, when I see you and you talked about my children, it's on.
Yeah, I mean, Colby has he's been poking the bear for all this time. It was due, right, in a way.
I think, some crazy might happen to these guys. A lot of talking, I kind of got caught up a little bit on that, trying to talk so much about me. I'm a fighter, I like to fight, I love to fight. And sometimes I was kind of passing my even values a little bit to get a fight. I remember I talk a lot of crap about Leon Edwards, why this guy, but.
You know, I pass my own values to put out a good show each week, I know where you're going.
But he's not me, but I respect, if you want to say whatever you want to say, say, but it might get dangerous, at some point. But I don't want to pass my values to get a fight, to get more money.
I respect that.
I don't want to do it.
You're top ranked for a reason. Off that title loss to Kamaru Usman, you come back against Wonderboy Thompson and you put on a clinic. I mean, that was a stark reminder of where you still are. How much does the loss to the champ, though, still eat at you, considering you had him hurt, you had him on the ropes in the first round? How much does that still just grind the gears every morning, every night?
Especially since you started off so hot in that fight.
To be honest, I'm over that already. It was a great experience. It was a very good experience. It was a lot of good, a lot of bad, but it was my journey. I just got to accept that. And then I rewatched that fight over 100 times for sure.
Okay, what happened then? What happened in your eyes?
Yeah, walk us through in your mind. What went right? What went wrong?
I was very emotional going to the fight, to be honest. In the first thing, that was the first mistake.
Like, you wanted to get at Kamaru, or you were like, you didn't know how you were going to feel about it?
I didn't know how I was going to feel it, how I was going to feel about it. But he said something on the pre-fight that got to my head a little bit, and then I was so mad that he got to my head.
What was it? Can you tell us?
Yeah, he said something like, I think Brett Okamoto asking, hey, so you guys trained together so many times. So the coach saw that training, the training partner saw that training. They know who's gonna win. And then he said, yeah, for sure they know who's gonna win. And then I was like, oh, you see who's gonna win. And that on the beginning that put a fire on me that I thought was good, but wasn't good. That motivation came from angry, come from the other place. A lot of people say anger is good. Yeah, it's good whenever you control it. But whenever the fight started, I want to get to him, and then I did. But whenever I got and I landed that hand, most of the times I'm very comfortable throwing, seeing you going down, thinking the next one, maybe one step back and keep that combination. Whenever I throw that right hand and I saw the other hand, I saw was a lot of angry on it. And I felt that, oh shit, I got to calm down. But then I was, the anger just kind of took over a little bit, and then I was very emotional. But I realized, I need to get, I'm out of control. I kind of felt that. And that was very hard to, it's kind of like a train going out of the trail. It was very hard for me to go back to the trail, especially I have a couple guys on my corner that helped me to get back to my trail. That's Daniel, Kami Barzini, and Henry. Kami and Henry wasn't there because they trained with Kamaru, so as a respect, he wasn't there. So it was just Daniel to try to pull me back, and it was very hard to pull me back. And when I was out of that trail, it was very hard to come back, and then Kamaru was very smart, and he kind of take advantage on that. And I think he did a good job, but it was was just me mentally not in the moment, like not kind of clear mind of the moment, you know. Okay.
In the story of your mind, because I like where you say, I think I needed that loss. Like, that's part of your story.
100%.
And to hear the lessons that you learned, you executed those lessons against Wonder Boy. We saw where you're at. Does the story end in your mind going through Camaro again? Is that important to you?
Not really. I have two goals in the UFC. And one I'm already making, that the first goal is to fight the best guys in the world. It's not just beat this guy, get an easy fight. I don't want that. That's number one goal, is to fight the best guys. Whenever I go out, I want to see my resume and I'm like, oh, shit, for everybody.
like RDA.
RDA, just like RDA. And then I'm like, oh, man, that guy for everybody. Like Wanderlei Silva, when you look at Pride, that guy for everybody. And I want to become a champion. Those are my clear two goals in the UFC. Doesn't have to be nothing against, I don't have nothing against Kamaru. He was just here today. He helped me out in a couple.
Did he really?
Yeah, he helped me out.
I'm so glad to hear that.
You guys are going
to
see in the video. He helped me out in a couple rounds. And we have a good relationship. And I have tremendous respect just because you beat me on a good day. I was in a good day. For sure, I was a little angry, but physically, technically, I was sharp, bro. I almost finished that guy. I remember I went out of the fight, my shin was big because of the head kick. My knee was sore because of the knee. I threw a knee on his face. Right hand, I threw a lot of things on that guy, and then he beat me even with all of that. So I have a lot of respect. It's nothing personal. It's nothing against him. I want to become a champion. If he's holding the belt, yeah, we're going to do a rematch. But I don't have that, oh, I got to beat this guy.
Well, hopefully you were nice enough to say, hey, champ, the Canelo idea, not a good idea, bro. Okay.
All right, just, Did you tell him that's a bad idea?
No. That's a payday, so.
It's a huge payday. Yeah, it's so a huge.
How about Conor saying he can beat Kamaru? I was like, well.
That's not a big payday. I'm happy for Kamaru, you know, so.
Do you think Conor gets that chance? This Dana White privilege
at 170. Here? At 170.
Not right now. He got to do a little work, I think. And a lot of people ask to me, like, what do you think about Conor? I still think he can do very good, but. He got to make a big change, you know, like, you know what changed in Masvidal? Changing when he went to the freaking
the
survival.
Whatever.
He's kind of like a survival, right? But it's Latino survival.
Right.
Whenever he went out, if Conor asked me, like, what do you think? I would say, bro, just freaking go away. Go to a freaking, don't need to be a mountain, but go to a freaking mountain, get all your training, out of freaking social media, out of freaking whiskey, go train, go back to your roots, you know, get your teammates, get your team, stay there for freaking 5-6 months, and I think he can come back, you know. But if you have a lot of yes men, and I don't think he's gonna come back. But if he does, if he really want that change and come back, I think he can do it, but he's gonna, it's a price to that, I believe.
Did the loss to Kamaru, it changed your mentality?
Indeed.
It sounds like it also changed your approach to how camps should be structured. Is that a fair point as well? Like all of that stems from that one event?
Yes, it changed a lot of things. I had to do a lot of mental change. First, I need to understand why he got to my head. You know, why did I feel offended because he said he's gonna beat me? Like, why should I feel offended on that? Because I wasn't believing myself or something, so I gotta dig very deep on that and understand why I feel uncomfortable with the guy saying he's gonna beat me. He's a fighter.
He's supposed to say that.
Like, why I'm gonna feel offended? Because his opinion affect me like that? Like, it shouldn't affect. So, and then I dig deep on that and I got a couple answers. It wasn't easy, but I got a couple answers. And he changed a lot.
The best answers are the hardest ones to take. All right, how about Khamzat Chimaev, who is a trash talker, loves to try to use intimidation. Has he attempted at all? Is there text messages? Is he sliding in your DMs? How has that build gone for you so far?
It is what it is, you know. I think I learned so much with that Kamaru Usman fight that it's gonna be very hard to get a guy going through my head and changing what I'm thinking. If we, like this guy, what do you think he says is gonna be easy? Whatever. If he says it's gonna be easy, nice to him. If he thinks it's gonna be hard, nice.
To get those tough answers, did you talk to Henry? Did you talk to a sports psychologist?
I have a sports psychologist there. It was hard. Like, it took me, to be honest, wasn't quick. It was a process, you know. And then And then she knows me. I've been working with her after I lost to Michelle Prozeres back in 2000.
Long time ago. Yeah.
17, I think, 18 in Brazil. 17. I started working with her. She was already working with Vicente Luque. Mm-hmm. And then he approached, hey, you should try her. She's very good. And then I start working with her. And then I like it. And then after that fight, after every fight that I do, we do evaluation test.
Win or lose?
Win or lose. We do an evaluation test. And then we go, oh, how was the training camp? How was the, she freaking 45 questions, maybe more. And then how was the training camp? How was this? How was the preparation? And then how was your mentality going? And then we start finding things out. And then whenever she knew already, when she found out, it was very hard to say it to me. It wasn't hard, but I was trying to get it, but I was open, but I wasn't seeing it yet. And then she was so smart, saying to me, read that thing here. Give me the good points. Give me what you understand. And then I was reading them. Oh, shit. And then I was getting a couple things, and then took me like freaking 2 months.
So because you were in, like, what was the hard part about the transition? Was that you had to reevaluate how you looked at yourself? Something like that?
Therapy's not easy, dude.
No, it's not. I've been in it, trust me. It's not easy.
It wasn't easy, and then it got to a point that I was overconfident going to the fight. I knew I was going to beat Kamaru Usman. And then I didn't respect the thing that he knew me a lot. And that couple of my coaches wanted to be there, I was a little bit overconfident. I'm just like, I'm going to walk to him. I'm going to throw a lot of heat on him. He's going to get uncomfortable. And he's going to do what?
Shoot or whatever.
He's going to take me down. And then the fight's going to start. You know, I'm going to do a lot of offensive from the bottom, a lot of shit. That was kind of was going through my head. And then I'm like, I never thought a good right-handed jab was going to stop me. And then I was very over. That was too much. That was an invincible thing that I wasn't alert enough to, oh, that guy can hit me. You know, I was just, but the great thing was I was able to understand why I felt that way and when that started changing. And another thing too, whenever you go to a title fight, it's a lot of opportunity, you know? And then has another thing that has to be with that too, I came from a very humble beginning. I hate to be kind of put me as a victim, but I did came from that. And whenever I saw a lot of opportunity, I would just want to take every single one.
You know? I want to ask you about that. So you grew up in Rio under difficult circumstances in Brazil, yet your household produces two UFC fighters, you, your brother Herbert, and
the other brother is a decorated military officer.
Navy SEAL. Navy SEAL. What's your other brother's name?
Fred.
Fred. Yeah. Fred's doing big stuff as well. What was it about your environment as a child and the challenges you went through that produced this thick skin, this toughness, I say it as a compliment, a savage ability to go after dangerous opportunities and achieve them?
To be honest, I do believe that was the only way, you know. Was tough. Wasn't miserable, wasn't starving. Was tough, but was happy on the same time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, whenever you had something, the celebration was the best. Like, I don't feel like I miss a lot. I for sure miss a little things here and there, but I was happy as a kid, you know? I never understood, but whenever it got to a point, I remember whenever I started doing jiu-jitsu, I remember the first was the thing that happened that my dad saw an opportunity. He trade, get paid me and my brother start training. But whenever we got back home, it's crazy because I remember my dad, crazy, I was freaking 11 years old, and I remember my dad saying, like, if you really want to train, if you like it, you try to be the best, you got to go hard. Otherwise, in 3 months, no more scholarship, I don't have money to pay. So those little things that got into you, and then I know if I don't go hard, if I don't give my best.
It built the drive in you. But not to jump over that, is it true that your father repaired cars for a living, and he had an opportunity to repair the car of a jiu-jitsu instructor and traded training for his sons?
It's a great dad, man.
That was it? Yeah.
How about Pops right there?
That's a great move.
No, great guy. Like, a lot of ups and downs for me through the growing up. That was a good point that changed me and my brother's life. We were 3 black belts.
All three of you. I know the younger brother is.
And the oldest one is, he's the one that started. Like, he kind of paved the way for me and my brothers. Even that, he took a different path. But we, that gym that took us called Oriente Jiu-Jitsu is still there, very big on Niterói, in my city. And they were affiliated with Nova União. So what happened was Tuesdays and Thursdays, we started going to Nova União.
Is that when Jose Aldo was there?
Jose Aldo just came right a little bit after. So I saw Jose Aldo coming, but my older brother was his sparring partner from Shaolin, Vitor Shaolin Ribeiro, when Shaolin was fighting. And I was looking all that. And then I saw my brother is a blue belt. I was maybe yellow belt, orange belt. And my brother was going like slapping hands, takedowns with Shaolin. Shaolin was beating the crap out of my brother. But he loved it that my brother would keep going. Then sometimes he just, I remember back then we had nothing. And then he gave my brother a Hunter. Remember those Hunter shorts? He gave my brother Hunter shorts. And then my brother was so happy. And then we going every Tuesday, Thursday. And then I saw T-Bao sleeping in the gym. And then after a little bit came Jose Aldo, all these guys. So me seeing these guys as very young, dude. And another thing too, like, I had my daddy for sure and my brother kind of paving the way, kind of set an example. But I saw Vitor Shaolin training so hard. And then I was there with a freaking orange belt. Whenever they were done training, he said, oh, now you can come train with me. And then he was the one that he didn't even know, or maybe he knew, but he was the one that pushed my style a little bit because he said—
Vitor, Shaolin.
Shaolin, because whenever he was done, he was always, everybody was done, that guy kept training. He kept training, and then he was, okay, now you can come and train with me, but if you stop, I'm never gonna train with you again. So he developed me going forward, trying, chasing, going.
So you were driven. You were driven by the idea that this could be the ticket out, and if I don't give everything I have, I'm gonna lose
yes.
it.
Did you know it was a ticket out or did you just like it?
Both. I knew if I didn't train hard with Shaolin, he would never train with me again. I know if I wasn't working, I would lose. So it was kind of like a fear with a drive on the same time, you know?
Well, you became a respected UFC lightweight fighter and one of the most decorated grapplers in the world. But that transition that happened to you upon moving up to welterweight, we've talked about a lot, especially ahead of your title shot, about what that did. Physically not having to cut that weight has to be a big deal. You know, Luke said first thing we walked in, I have no idea how you made 155 back
this
in the day.
Shocking.
What else, though, about that change in your career when you went on that win streak? What else changed in your life that fueled that?
Changed a lot of things. I think I was punishing my body so much to get to perform, you know. I was just killing my body. I remember I was running every day whenever I got a call that I'm fighting. And then whenever it passed, like last 3 weeks, it was every other day running just to make the weight and training.
How much were you eating a day at that time?
Not much, bro.
Like 1,000 calories maybe? Somewhere?
Yeah, maybe a little bit more than that, but.
Not much.
Not much at all. But the stress was too much. A lot of things was too much. I couldn't get a fight. I remember UFC offered me short notice, oh, you want to fight these guys in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and it was a good fight, and then like, no, I can't.
Just because you couldn't make the weight.
I'm not going to make the weight. Yeah. And then my last fight at 155 was here in Florida, and I had my nutritionist, Brazilian guy, freaking high level, Marcelo Ferro. He's very under the lights. He has Instagram, but don't use it as much, but he works on the labs. He does a lot of things. He worked with a lot of good guys in Brazil back in the days. And he saw my weight cut. And then when he saw it, he was just like, you cannot do that anymore. He said, you know what keeps you alive is your cells. And you're killing a lot of your cells with that. And I look at your eyes, and I remember my last weight cut here in Florida against Mike Davis when Jacare fought Jack Hermanson.
You won that contest.
I won that fight, but wow. I remember I was 180 on the fight week.
For a 155
fight. For 155. And then I cut, I can sweat a lot. I do believe I can make 155. I cannot fight, I cannot perform, but go to the scale and I can make 155. I'm not gonna be able to fight. I have no chin. But mentally, going to the weight cut, I can make it. So I knew I was going to make it. It was brutal, it was hard, a lot of hot baths and things. And when he saw me, he was just like, you're not gonna do that anymore. That's your last fight. And my wife agreed with him and all the coaches. And then I win that fight. And then I was just like, yeah, I'll call Ali, call the UFC, say I'm gonna fight at 170. And then whenever I make that decision, talk to my coach, everybody, hey, it's about time. No, not one coach say, you're crazy. Every single one. Finally, okay, now we talk, everybody. And after that decision, whenever I called the UFC and said that, well, my next fight is gonna be a welterweight, I wanna change it. It wasn't like, and I, back training, then I can kind of relax a little bit in my weight. My weight, always when I make 55, my weight was blowing up. Like after I just got very big, like 200, 198. Whenever I decided that, I didn't blow up. I wasn't craving nothing. I was at 190. After that, I was back in training and I just got a call. Hey, you wanna fight this Russian dude? He's even here. She's training here now, Alexei Kunchenko.
Yeah, you won that one as well.
When I fight the Russian dude, 20-0 in 2 weeks. And I say, 2 weeks? I can make 170. And I remember I was driving to Orlando. My kid had a Orlando Open to compete in jiu-jitsu. Yep. I was driving, and then on the way we stopped, and we stopped. You know where we stopped?
Wendy's?
Hooters.
Five Guys.
Five Guys.
We stopped at Five
what's a,
Guys.
What's a Gilbert Burns Five Guys burger? Walk us through.
Whew. Double cheeseburger, two patties, and
oh my!
I like the vegetables, but I put everything. I like that's tomato. Awesome. I put, and I was eating that burger, and the freaking Ali FaceTimed me, and then I was just like, "What's up, bro? You wanna fight these dudes? See, what do you think? I don't know him. No, I think he's more stand up. But take a look." And then I took a look, and I remember literally was eating that burger, fries, and then I called Harry, and I like that fight. What do you think? 2 weeks. Uruguay, Vicente's fighting there already, Mike Perry. Let's go, let me take a look. Yeah, and then I talked to Carl, my coach, and we decided to take that fight, and we took it.
All right, it may have taken until the Damian Maia knockout win or the, you know, Woodley win for people to go, oh crap, this guy's a legitimate welterweight title contender. What was the fight for you that it was like proof of concept that you at welterweight could potentially do some damage here at the rankings?
Two fights. I don't think it was even the Damian Maia. I think it was the first fight, because in 2 weeks I beat the guy that was 20-0 undefeated, freaking Russian tough dude, in the Gunnar Nelson fight. Because yeah, it was the same thing. After 1 month, I got a call again. 2 weeks notice. Now in Denmark, you want to say, yeah, for sure I won it. It wasn't that bad last one. Now I'm in a better shape. I wait if I can do it. And after that Gunnar Nelson, everything started changing. You know, I remember I went to Vegas to the Quintet. I grappled there when...
Kicked ass too, yeah.
When Kamaru fought Kobe the first time, and then I was talking to Sean. I was annoying Sean. Like, yeah. I was texting. He was mad that he gave me his phone.
Like,
then
Sean
was,
Shelby, give me that title shot.
UFC matchmaker fight. Sean Shelby.
I want another fight. Hey, I'm ready. Someone pulled out, I would just... And then when we were there at the Quintet, I say, bro, give me another fight. And then he said, no, I'm going to give you a rank opponent next. Because after I beat Gunnar was just out of the fight. They put me at 15, 14. I became ranked, and they said, I'm going to give you a ranked opponent. And then he was going through the ranking. A couple guys was kind of busy. A couple guys saying no. And then he said, you want to fight Damian Maia? I said, for sure I want to fight Damian Maia. A lot of respect is a hero to me, but for sure I want to fight Damian Maia. I think I'm gonna get that fight done, and then took that November, he said that. The fight was just in March. It took a little while to they get the fight done, but the fight got done. And then the knockout was a big thing, and then the Woodley fight, but I think the Gunnar Nelson fight was the story.
Then you couldn't be denied. Luke, I have to bring this up, because when we walked into this beautiful facility that you did say, because you're the protector here of all things Bushido and good practice.
Yeah, I just try not to be a jerk.
You said, BC, you're going to have to take your shoes off.
Yeah.
And Luke, I live a certain style code that I didn't wear socks.
Yes, it's called toe fungus.
And at first I was a little bit embarrassed. But here's the thing about guys like Dorino and myself. He wears that...
You're nothing alike.
He wears that cauliflower ear like a badge on his sleeve.
Because he earned it.
It tells the journey of how he got here.
He didn't get cauliflower ear from not showering.
My disgusting toes, which were of a lifetime of climbing, of persevering.
All right.
When you look at my toes, what do you think, Gilbert?
Besides nausea.
I figured she'd get it done. She'd go to a manicure and get it done soon.
Gilbert, let me ask two questions for me, and we could probably call it here. But first thing I want to know is, you say what the stakes are here. You stop a guy like Chimaev, you stop the hype train. But there might be more to it. The odds came out, and I know you're gonna say you don't care, which is fine. I'm not asking you to care. But what I would say is they have him at a minus 400, which to me seems outrageous. Now, obviously, he's running a ton of hype, and the bettors, or the odds makers, they put the line in a certain way so they can get money. Nevertheless, as much as we might respect you and all the hardcores respect you infinitely, do you feel like a win like this might reassert you, not merely as a title contender, but as like, I don't know, outside of what the two guys at the top have done, Colby and Kamaru, do you feel like this is a chance to reassert yourself as a dominant force after the Thompson win, after the loss to Kamaru, like sort of really putting your stamp on the division again?
Yeah, I do think it makes a big statement, you know, especially stopping this guy, not just beating, but just the best scenario that I see is that guy taking me down and then I'm getting up and then I'll grapple him and then he take me down again, I'll grapple him and then eventually getting a finish. It's not going to just be that lucky punch, that luck thing. It's going to be like, oh, he all wrestled the guy. The guy wrestled him, he defended, he got back up, he did this, and then he got a finish. And then I think that make that type of statement like, and like you said, I don't mind if people make those odds. Like,
yeah, but
it
that's
doesn't
insulting.
Change.
It's crazy. Look, if he was the favorite, I'd be okay with it, whatever. They are what they are. But minus 400 is just disrespectful.
Yeah, I get it. I get it because Dan Hooker fought. They just put myself like losing for Dan Hooker a couple of years ago. They put my fight with Kamaru, so they think this and that. They see the weakness. They see little things. They see a loss. And this guy, they just see like, wow, Darren Till, these guys, these, oh, you know, like all the hype and Dana White, oh, this guy's a murderer. So yeah, I get it, the odds, but you don't change, you know. I'm like, I got those questions. If you fight Colby, if you fought, I'm gonna throw with the same intensity. I'm gonna try to knock someone out. Even if it's freaking Damian Maia, nice guy, Gunnar Nelson, I'm gonna try to get a finish. That type of odds, or I'm not looking for the respect. I'm looking for getting a finish, you know. And like again, I got back to my goals. I want to fight the best guys. I want to beat the best guys, and I want to become a champion. It doesn't, those little things that don't let distract me as much, you know. It is what it is. We're gonna find out.
All right. What if UFC matchmakers called you up and said, let's say you beat Chimaev, so you get past that hurdle. They say, we can either give you another title shot, or we can give you Conor McGregor and make you a household name and give you your biggest payday, I'm gonna assume, by a lot. At this point in your career, which one do you take?
I don't know. I'm not gonna say no for those, you know, for a big payday, but to be honest with you, not lying to yourself, I wanna become a champion more than I want that payday, big pay. I wanna become a champion, like, not even comparing, but let's go to a freaking Dustin Poirier position and I'll be freaking mad if instead of fight for the title, win that title, I fought Conor, make all that money, I was still missing something, you know, like my goal is to become a champion for sure. I want to pay they as well, but that's a shadow. That's not the goal. If I want to be, I want to make like a big money, I'll be on a freaking stock market. I will do something different. But my goal right now is fight the best guys in the world, and I believe Chimaev is one of these best guys in the world, and I want to become
He's
a champion.
He's a real one, Luke. Remember that song by Paul LaCole, Where Have All the Cowboys
Gone? They're right here.
Right fucking here, all right, dude?
I know you're not living for this. I know this is not why you compete. You compete for yourself and your family and all those other reasons. But on Sunday morning, after the fight, what do you want the MMA community to say about you?
That's the thing, I don't...
You don't care?
Yeah, I don't care. Like,
as long as you get your hand raised, that's it.
That's it. And then they can say whatever they want, a couple guys. And it's so much hate out there. You know, it's so much, for sure it's a lot of love too, but it's so much hate. It's so much fake. It's so much that I don't expect nothing. You can say whatever you want. Like, if I would change your question, like, what do I want my wife to say, my kids to say, my coach to say, my friends to say?
Yes.
I want it to be, man, that was a good performance. It don't matter if I lose, if I won. Well, man, you freaking show up and you did your best. Like, and that's that's the ultimate thing for me. It's not the media, it's not the Brazil. It's, for sure, I love my country. For sure, I see what the media says, but this is not the most important thing. Like, the most important thing is my coach, my family, my teammates, the guys that saw all the work that I put in, I show up, and those guys be, man, I'm very proud of you. That, boom, that's it.
All right, I'm inspired.
Yeah, me too, actually. I'm actually surprised. I knew you were smart and level-headed, but this is an interesting. All right, last one for me. Is your family going to the fight?
Yes, for sure.
Had they been to fights before?
For sure, a couple of times.
The little ones too?
Yeah, the little ones, they love
that. Apparently.
They know all the fighters. They have the cards. They love Adesanya. They love Francis Ngannou.
Do they ever love any of your opponents?
They what?
Do they ever love any of your opponents?
They like Kamaru. Kamaru was here. My kids were here today. So they like Kamaru. The little one got mad at Kamaru. Said, I'm going to kick his balls when he saw him. And then, like, 2 months after, he saw Kamaru, and the big one said, go, Kamaru, is that? You say you're going to kick his balls? He said, no, I'm not going to kick him. I was just mad at him because he beat daddy. But I like him. He's a nice guy. I like Samira, too. Samira is Kamaru's daughter. So, but they were there. They were there when I fought Dan Hooker. They know who Dan Hooker is. They said, that guy beat you, daddy. He threw a knee on you. I had a big cut right here because of Dan Hooker. Remember, he cut you after the fight, and then you got stitches. And I said, yeah, I remember that stitch hurt. But it's part of my journey. Daddy learned so much. You know that, right? I said, yeah, we know. You got better after that and this and that. And so they know. They know Dan Hooker. They know Adesanya. They've been big fan of Adesanya. Francis Ngannou, Max Holloway, they follow everybody. So they've been a couple of my fights. They were there when they fought Stephen Thompson. Mm. And now they're growing up 9-7. They want to go every single fight. And then I have my guy that does my suit right here, Mike Russell. Yeah. He's going to make it same suit for the kids.
Oh, so that's awesome.
It's going to be nice.
That's
it's
awesome.
Be looking good
for you.
Gilbert, I was thinking, though, that we'll call it cauliflower toe. Because it what it means is I've kicked a lot of ass through here.
Nice.
Can you believe I've tied my professional fortunes to this mongoloid? It's unbelievable.
Gilbert Burns, going after that prize.
Yes, he is. Daring to be great.
Hamzat Chimaev in the way, UFC 273, Jacksonville, Florida. We're going to find out some key, important answers to some big questions as your story continues. Best of luck to you, brother.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.